It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Who's on the line?
Hello, this is Pam Miller with Alaska Community Action on Toxics.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to call in today. I know you have a busy schedule, but you've also been to a place where you have some recent information, and that's Juneau, if I understand correctly.
Yes, we just got back from Juneau late last night. We had a group of people representing communities from Point Hope, Elam, Fairbanks, Anchorage, as well as Yakutat, who are affected by contamination caused by PFAS, or per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances that are affecting the drinking water of communities throughout Alaska.
And that's just what we'd like to speak about. But first of all, if you could describe the organization that you represent and what its mission is and a little bit of its history so listeners will have an idea of what we're talking about.
Sure. I work with an organization called Alaska Community Action on Toxics, and we're an environmental health and justice research and advocacy organization that works with communities throughout Alaska that are affected by contamination caused by military, mining, oil and gas, and also chemical corporations that are making chemicals that contaminate our homes, contaminate the northern environments and the Arctic.
Is this organization a nonprofit?
Yes. We're a nonprofit organization and really focusing on our mission, which is that we believe everyone has the right to clean air, clean water, and toxic-free food. So we work for the health and well-being of everyone. And that's really the tenet of environmental justice, that everybody deserves these as basic human rights.
Could you describe for listeners a little bit about how long the organization has existed? How did it come into being?
Yes, I helped to found the organization in 1997. And it really came about because I had worked previously with Greenpeace and started an environmental justice and toxic program. And then Greenpeace changed their focus. And so it seemed to be that an organization was needed, kind of a more homegrown organization to address these serious public health and environmental issues related to contamination. And we got started, really, one of our, I guess, origin stories is that very respected elder and community health aide in the community of Savunga contacted me because they were dealing with really serious military contamination that came about from the Cold War era. So huge military bases were established out on St. Lawrence Island, known by the traditional name of Sibokok, in the 1950s, and they operated through the 1970s. And she had tried for years to get help from agencies, both federal and state, and no one would take her seriously, even though she had such a long and important understanding of the health disparities that she associated with the military contaminations, really a cancer crisis, endocrine disorders and reproductive and birth defects in her community. So she requested my help, and we began working together, and ultimately this led to community-based research and advocacy that we're still involved with today. So she really continues to inspire our work every day. Even after she passed, she requested that we carry on her legacy. And that's one example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm curious about your own background in terms of where were you born and what did you do before you became involved in this particular project?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I was born and raised in a very small town in rural Ohio, in northeastern Ohio, called Dover, Ohio. And I was always really interested in biology and science. So that's the field that I went into, marine science and environmental science. And really, I think I was inspired to do this work because Mike Pound was the site of a Superfund location that is one of the most highly contaminated sites in the nation because of a chemical corporation there called Dover Chemical that makes really harmful and persistent chemicals that affected my neighborhood and my community. And my mother was a nurse, and she also just was one of those people who helped people, was a healer, and she began to witness the patterns of illness in our neighborhood and even within my own family, members of our family that contracted cancer. So it was really because of her and my kind of natural interest in science, natural history and biology, that I got into this work. But I realized at some point that science wasn't enough, that yes, science is important to document and to help us understand the world, but to change the world, it was really necessary to become an activist as well as a scientist.
Well, no, thank you for sharing that background. I'd like to bring us now to focus on one aspect of the work that's being done that caused you to travel to Juneau, because I know that there have been a number of legislators, Alaskan legislators, who've been working on this question of PFAS, and I know Jesse Keel is one. There are others. He's a senator in the Alaska State Senate. Would you just describe for listeners kind of the outline of the issue associated with that particular substance?
Yes, and this is really a problem throughout Alaska because of the fact that this class of chemicals, PFAS, or per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which are also known as forever chemicals, are used in industrial firefighting foams used on military bases and airports primarily, because they're very effective at putting out fuel and chemical-related fire. So it's been the dispersive use of these industrial firefighting foams on military sites and airports that has resulted in the contamination of drinking water from in communities, I should say, in the drinking water of communities from the North Slope through Southeast Alaska. And we were just in Juneau with a group of people representing many of these communities to work specifically on advocating for the bill that Senator Keel introduced called Senate Bill 67. And that bill does one important thing, which is to phase out the use of PFAS in firefighting foams. And PFAS in firefighting foams goes by another name, aqueous foam-forming foams, because they are very effective at putting out fires. However, they can result in long-term harm to drinking water and public health. And we've now documented many sites around Alaska that are contaminated with PFAS, especially around airports and military bases. And the Department of Environmental Conservation's own database shows that there are at least 469 sites around Alaska that have soil and or water contamination caused by PFAS. So this is a really major, major public health issue. But I would say that Senate Bill 67, while important and an important step, doesn't go far enough. And we are requesting much more comprehensive legislation that also establishes health protective drinking water standards, provides measures to make communities affected by PFAS whole, that is, making sure that people have safe alternative drinking water sources, medical monitoring. We want to prevent incineration of these chemicals because that's just really a false solution, and to phase out all non-essential uses of PFAS, so not just in firefighting foam, but also in several other major product categories like food packaging, personal care products, many products that we use in our homes, clothing, textiles, pots and pans. This is such a ubiquitous group of chemicals that we need to look at all the uses, and because they're so very harmful, persistent, and toxic, we need to really replace them with safe alternatives.
Well, thank you for that summary of where we are with that particular legislation at the moment. Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska, and I'm speaking with Pam Miller from Alaska Community Action on Toxics. And I'm curious, as you were talking about this, I was realizing I'm saying, okay, there are some public water systems, particularly in the Mat-Su borough. Palmer has a system, and then there are many, many people who have separate wells, and some of them, some people live near airports, et cetera. Is there any recommendation or any information regarding testing on all of the different sources of water we use and how contaminated it might be?
Well, the state is really behind in testing and has not done comprehensive testing, and I don't believe that testing for PFAS has been done out in the valley, as far as I'm aware. We have kind of taken matters into our own hands here in Anchorage and Fairbanks to do water quality testing, and we found PFAS levels at concerning levels in all the water bodies that we tested in Anchorage and the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Much more testing is needed, and we found extremely high levels around the Anchorage International Airport in Lake Spinard and Lake Hood, concerning levels in lakes such as the Long Lake and Little Campbell, Sand Lake and Jewel Lake. And I think one thing that's really important to know and to take action about is these chemicals are also very strongly bioaccumulative. So you can have levels about 2,000 times higher in the fish than you would find in the water body where the fish are from. So because, you know, Alaskans love fish and we want to protect the health and safety of the fish and this source, this very important source of food. So it's really critical to have a comprehensive monitoring program that includes not only water, but fish as well as produce, because we know that in some places such as Gustavus and Moose Creek, that garden produce is contaminated when it's watered with PFAS-contaminated water. So these are just some things that we need to take action on, really.
So I, as you were speaking, I was also thinking, okay, are there any parallel efforts ongoing at the legislative level to improve the testing for not only PFAS, but other elements that you could describe?
Well, I have to say that the State Department of Environmental Conservation has not been good about not only conducting proper monitoring for PFAS, but certainly other persistent chemicals as well. So that is a real gap, I think, in our knowledge and understanding. We've done community-based research in communities such as those on St. Lawrence Island to look at the long-term harm caused by the military there, including PFAS contamination. And yet, I think our state is really lagging behind so many other states that have implemented really good and comprehensive programs that include the testing of fish and produce and other ways that we can be exposed to these harmful chemicals. And I think it's also important that to know that other states around the country have really stepped up to enact very strong legislation that phases out PFAS, but also allows for and provides for, I should say, medical monitoring and some of the other provisions that I mentioned. So other states, 23 states around the country have enacted over 100 different policies just on PFAS, and many more are coming. So many more effective policies are under consideration right now. So this is an area of work where there are just great precedents around the country of legislators taking really strong action and stepping ahead of the federal government in protecting our own residents.
In regard to the legislation that's being discussed in Juneau at the moment, is there some sense at this moment in time how successful the legislation would be, and is it going to be realistically passed this session, or what? I know it's a predictive thing, but what's the talk about its being able to be passed?
Well, at this point, we're really optimistic. The bill, Senate Bill 67, had a second hearing in the Senate Resources Committee on Monday, March 13th. And I'd say there's a lot of bipartisan support for this bill. So I believe there are at least 8 co-sponsors, including 2 Republicans, Senator Kathy Geisel and Senator Gary Stevens, are supporting it. So I think it will have enough votes to pass from the Senate Resources Committee, and from here it goes to the Senate Finance Committee. So at this point, we're feeling pretty optimistic. One of the things that I guess concerns us is that Senator Keel scaled back this legislation from the last version that he introduced last session. So it does really focus on one thing, which is to phase out PFAS in firefighting foam. Again, important to turn off the tap, but it doesn't include many of the other provisions that we think are necessary to truly protect public health.
So if there are individuals listening to this broadcast and they're interested in this particular topic and would like to maintain a clear view of what is happening as it moves along, or for that matter, to influence what is being discussed, what are your suggestions for those listeners? What should they do?
Well, great question. I think probably the most important thing that people can do is contact their legislators and talk about why this is important to pass this session. This is an urgent public health issue. People are being affected around Alaska, and they're being harmed. And these are chemicals that are known to cause harm at such low exposure levels and associated with serious adverse effects, including cancers such as kidney and testicular cancer, reproductive harm, immune system suppression, and a range of endocrine effects. These can disrupt our thyroid. So really, really critical public health issue, and I would just urge people to contact their legislators, talk to them about it in an email or a phone call, and really press upon them the urgency to pass Senate Bill 67, but also to enact more comprehensive legislation that would require monitoring and to phase out other uses of PFAS.
Very good. You mentioned your own history in terms of being in a toxic environment. I have to fully disclose that I grew up in an industrial town in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and the town was located on a river. And that river had at one point been used for boating and fishing and all the rest. When I was a kid, it was not. You just didn't want to touch the water. However, I can fast forward and say that I've gone back decades later, and with considerable work, that river once again had fish in it and was a totally transformed area. And I guess I keep thinking of that because at varying times we look at toxic collections of one thing or another, and it seems like it's going to take so long, or is there any way to actually make a difference? But over time, and it does take time, I've experienced changes that have occurred that have been very positive. So kudos to you and all those people who are working. When I've gone to the website, I can see that you have a board of directors, you have a number of people doing the work. It's not just one person, and that's a good thing. Any last comments now for our listeners before we do finish up today?
Well, I think to your point that working together, we can make change. But I'm sure that the cleanup of the river where you grew up, that didn't happen because people just, sat by and watched, but that I'm sure it took really strong efforts by people working together to make that change. And I think that's just the thing I would say in closing is that we are stronger together, and we have to organize together to make change. These things just don't happen, and it requires a lot of work, and sometimes it takes a lot of work over many decades to see those changes, but we have to do that work now to protect our future generations as well as ourselves.
Well, Pam Miller with the Alaska Community Action on Toxics, I've really appreciated your sharing the information. I know many of our listeners have varying kinds of concerns about toxic elements, and I wish you well in continuing this effort.
Well, thanks. It was great talking with you today, and if any of your listeners would like to discuss anything further, we always welcome that, and our website is a good way to get a hold of us, or our phone number is 907-222-7714. Really appreciate having the chance to talk with you today.
All right. Stay well out there.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.